Hello and welcome to The Unreleased, the design research podcast. This podcast exists to help map, broadcast and promote design research worldwide. The Unreleased podcast is brought to you by IAD, Universidade Europeia and UNIT.com. The interview was recorded at IAD as part of the PhD in Design program. To know more, visit unrelease.unitcom-yad.pt. That's unrelease.unitcom-yad.pt. On this episode, Professor Anna Margarida Ferreira talks with Sandy Black, professor at the London College of Fashion and author of acclaimed books on fashion design, such as the Handbook of Fashion Studies and the Sustainable Fashion Handbook. During this conversation, Sandy shares her views on sustainable fashion design, new approaches to business models in fashion, and what she believes to be the skills to future fashion designers.
Everybody has to think much more holistically, is what I would advise students. They really do have to think about not just what it looks like, not just what materials they're using, but also what is its end of life and how could it be recirculated? How can these materials be maintained within circulation?
Here are Anna Margarida and Sandy.
Hello. I welcome Professor Sandy to Lisbon and IAD. It's a pleasure and an inspiration to have you here with us having this conversation.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you also for accepting to do this podcast. To start and in an introductory way, I would love you to talk a little bit about the different but interesting projects that we can find at the web page of the Center for Sustainable Fashion. And in doing so, could you briefly reinforce the main design issues and or research topics that underpin or frame some of them, please?
The big topic is obviously sustainability in fashion and design for sustainability, particularly because we're a group of researchers, there's four professors, of which I'm one, and really all of us have come from the fashion industry in some way or another over a period of time. And developing research in this area is something that we've been working on for more than 10 years. The Centre for Sustainable Fashion has just had its 10-year anniversary, which is quite something. And so it's been quite pioneering. And everybody has interests because I had a business. I was a designer in knitwear, self-taught designer. And one of the things that motivated me was, first of all, just appreciation for materials. And this is something which is... all sorts of things have changed, such as the modes of communication and so on. However, the fundamental issues to do with maintaining and running and surviving with a small design-led business don't change, really. They seem to, those problems and issues seem to continue. Plus, we have them exacerbated by the need to actually conserve resources and to look at slowing down things that we can do within the fashion industry. So there's a very large agenda, and what we can do is look at creativity, look at innovation, look at new ways of doing things. And the projects that are being undertaken at the Centre for Sustainable Fashion really do look at creativity and design as a force for change and a powerful position within an industry that is predicated very much on commercial success. But I think that the sort of businesses that, certainly my own business, a creative business, can be an engine, a creative engine, like a research and development, R&D, for the fashion industry, much larger. So the sorts of projects and design issues are about trying to reconcile and balance many different aspects. Sustainability being the overpinning and overarching and underpinning raison d'etre, because as we know, the industry has got faster and faster, more, now, fast, cheap. We cannot continue, it's unsustainable. So it doesn't matter how beautiful anything is, in a way one has to be holistic. I think the issue is about joining these needs and reconciling business and prosperity and livelihood with creativity, with efficiency and very conscious use of materials. And also design can be such a catalyst for other things such as social good. We have an ethos within London College of Fashion, which is where our centre is sited. It's a University of the Arts London research centre. However, we are situated in London College of Fashion, so fashion is at our core, which obviously encompasses so many things, including textiles, including design issues, including business economics, including communication, social cultural issues. We have a philosophy called Better Lives, which is very much important. It's about using fashion for good and not just for profit. So we're trying to work on three different levels. We're trying to look at how we can do things differently, yet still, I maintain that we still have to have delight in fashion. It still has to speak to us. It's very culturally important. It's a symbolic pleasure, but it's also a hard business, a hard economic business. So we're always trying to reconcile sustainability while still maintaining all these elements of creativity, financial success, but not necessarily exponential growth. I think growth is one of the issues that we're trying to deal with. What's big enough? How can people maintain? Is there a level which is...
And a new society mindset, yes, about what's important, yes, in the, yes, end.
So we have to, obviously, all of the sort of social justice issues and the working conditions issues are crucially important within the very large fashion industry, the global fashion industry. And so we're trying to work on three different levels. One is research, design-led research particularly, from, with, and for creative practitioners and industry. And industry large and small. So I do a lot of work with micro fashion businesses, which are businesses that are creative, design-led, under 10 employees. We also work with high street companies in the centre, such as ASOS, H&M, Marks & Spencer, you know, many people, Nike. We have industry-facing projects, and then we also have curriculum-facing projects. So some of my colleagues have just worked on a very major initiative, which is an online educational course for sustainable fashion. And we're working in collaboration with the Kering Group, who are overall owners of businesses such as Stella McCartney, Gucci, Alexander McQueen, and so on, Puma, and trying to really work with the industry to help particularly their design teams, but also their senior management and buyers to understand sustainability. But this is a public-facing, online, six-week course that was launched last autumn. And that's a world first, and we're very proud of that. So trying to pioneer new ways of just trying to spread the awareness and education and action towards sustainable fashion, because it's a very big, very complex subject.
Yes, of course. And a really holistic understanding of it, yes, and eventually to look design without that kind of responsibility to society. So I'm quite amazed in the, in, yeah, the fashion about the way you are looking at all the challenge that you are, yes, addressing. Thank you for this overview. Going in deep in our conversation, I have here some set of questions, different ones, reflecting the main interest of our research and PhD students, exploring domains of fashion design, sustainability, or even better, sustainable fashion. And this first one, could you briefly explain what is for you sustainable fashion design?
No, I can't actually, not briefly. Again, it's approaching things in a holistic way, being very conscious of the impacts of all the decisions that are made. A designer, that's mm-hmm. we are interested in the design-led research simply because a designer is quite a central role within any business, whether it's a one-man band or whether it's a bigger design team, mm-hmm. because there are decisions to be made. And there's a lot of talk about high percentage, sometimes 70-80% of the decision making is at the in terms of environmental impact mm-hmm. is made at the design stage. That's just environmental impact, but also decisions about styling, design detailing, components and so on, all of those they have an implication, not just cost, because designers are so much geared towards cost implications, but what we want people to think of is be able to trade off certain things and be aware of the holistic process. So the design side is we see as crucial because they have to be familiar enough with the manufacturing processes to be able to talk to sample makers, machinists, and perhaps factories, whether they're near or far. They also have to be able to talk to the marketing and sales people, and that then filters to the senior management. So we feel that there's a pivotal position for design research.
I would say that almost the second question that I have here, that's why it's important design-led research
yes.
In the context of sustainability is almost answered. But anyway, sometimes our students in particular have some difficulties in understanding what it's really the difference between design-led research or research led design, in the sense that exploring more the concept of new technology and based on performance and not on all the quality dimensions that we consider important
yeah.
design.
Well, design can take all sorts of forms. It can be incremental. Mm-hmm. It can be just a bit like something else. Mm-hmm. We're not so interested in that. Or it could be much more radical. And it could be innovative, and that requires research and understanding. It requires, the difference between straight design and design practice that's sort of implementing incremental changes, maybe just aesthetic changes, and radical design, is something to do with not knowing the answer
yes.
straight away. All research is about finding out. It's about starting somewhere, but it's about not knowing quite where you're going to end up. And there's a lot of materials-driven research going on at the moment in all over many institutions, universities and research institutions, to find ways of perhaps using and reusing waste, whether it's post-consumer, whether it's food waste, bio-waste. There's a lot of that sort of research going on. So awareness about materials is the first place that people start mm-hmm. with design for sustainability. It usually is materials-based.
Yeah.
That is one crucially important aspect. As I said, it may influence quite a high percentage of the environmental impact, but there's also, there's location, there's quite a move for sort of not sending clothes all around the world, although that's good. We may have lost some of the skills that will mean that we can bring it back locally to any of the countries that have yes. Stopped producing in the way that many of us have. It isn't about necessarily going to the past, because it's also about harnessing new ideas, new technologies. But innovation can take many forms. As I say, it's about you could do things in new ways, the same things in new ways, or you could do new things or new combinations of things in new ways, or you can look at it at a number of different levels. As I said, it could be radical, or it could be much more incremental. But we're quite interested in systems as well, and the changing of mindsets and the way things have come to be done.
Yes.
So the sort of systemic and holistic approach has become much more important, and an awareness of how one can't necessarily impact everything simultaneously. But I think the more education there is, the more awareness of what are the implications of these decisions. I mean, at one time, a fashion buyer would have had no knowledge of how something was being produced or even where it was produced. They're only looking at the cost and just driving the cost down. But the social justice implications have been exposed. Transparency within the fashion industry has been something, thank goodness, that has now come to the fore. Therefore, accountability is crucial, and nobody can just sweep things under the carpet. And also, the social media and media generally means that there isn't as many hiding places. So, for companies, they really have to look at their social responsibility.
Okay, I completely agree. I must say, and reinforcing some ideas, I would say that issues they are related. Our concepts between local and global, between looking at sustainability in the three main pillars of social, environment and economics, and not just looking for one dimension only. And something that I really value, and I consider that it's important to go in that direction, that is a kind of innovation in model in the business models.
Yeah,
it's very
important.
Exactly.
That's something that some of my projects, particularly, I focused on business models because, again, having been myself a small business that's just very much self-taught, developing ideas but just trying things out and still trying to make a living out of it, which is the hard part. I really feel that there's a lot of those businesses which are innovating in terms of all sorts of ideas, doing things differently. And at the same time, this very often has a sustainability benefit. Mm-hmm. Now, I want to support, and with teams that I put together, we try and support those micro-businesses very often, one of my new projects is called Rethinking Fashion Design Entrepreneurship, Fostering Sustainable Practices, and that is really about doing just that. It's about really looking at what goes on inside these micro businesses and how innovative they could be, how agile they are. But larger companies can learn a lot from this. And what happens is these companies are highly innovative, but they blossom, they do something, they get celebrated, but then they can't survive. So it's also about, is there a way to support them in order to survive, and how can we sort of harness that creativity and perhaps analyse it and use it for greater benefit?
Yes. The scaling process that are important for business is one of the issues that we have still a lot of work to do, probably, but I think it's important.
Well, we have sort of scale. We can't keep growing the amount of product that is made infinitely and exponentially as we have done. So the project Fire Up that it stood for Fashion Innovation Research and Enterprise, and trying to sort of really engage those things but also help small companies. What that project did is it tested out more closer connection between academic research and what goes on in universities and the industry, because they're often parallel, and we're trying to connect those two together. And I think that's one of the key things that we try to create, these bridges, make a much more porous relationship between what goes on in academia and universities and what goes on out in the real world, because people in the real world are so time poor. In the fashion industry, there is no standard acceptance of something like R&D, apart from researching the next collection.
Yes.
But
Which the dynamics, the business dynamics is something different, and probably I'd say that they even consider important, but don't have the time or the resources to do it. And looking in the innovation process considered so important for design, but also for research and design, I'm very interested to have what you understand as the result of the intersection of design, art, science, craft, and technology.
Your hope for that is innovation, because there's quite a lot of scientific work. There's a huge amount of scientific work that goes on in labs, and things get put on the shelf. And often what designers just need access to some things, and I think material innovation is has really developed, but it's often by somebody just taking a fresh look at something. I can give an example of a collaboration with science and art that's done by a researcher called Manel Torres, who was at the Royal College of Art in textiles, and was looking at spray cans and looking at ways to create a spray-on fabric. And he collaborated with scientists at Imperial College and actually has a company called Fabrican, where it's fabric in a can. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that sort of concept often comes from just a small spark, but then it takes a lot of energy and a lot of financing and a lot of effort to try and create something that can be brought to market. But those sorts of cross-disciplinary collaborations, I do think, have huge potential.
Exactly.
It's not easy. It doesn't always happen first time, but I think design thinking, which is now a thing, mm-hmm. And fashion thinking even, is something which is about being able to cross over, being able to facilitate, communicate, and often visualize, because designers actually are very good at communicating to different groups and using often visuals. What we do is we're makers, we're prototypers. We make things to understand, make things to find out. That sort of empirical type research is really what fashion people, textile people, makers do. And interestingly, design, fashion has often been treated quite differently outside of design.
Mm-hmm.
There's design, architecture, graphic design, product design, and so on. And then there's fashion, which is felt to be just commercial.
Okay.
And I, again, have been trying to make links across. So I see myself as somebody trying to facilitate, make bridges, and create communication.
Yes, I agree that one of the challenges and you think to address is how to promote communication with different players that we have to make and join together
I mean, you don't just put people in a room and it can do.
Of course.
But, you know, it takes work and effort and it takes... But, you know, we've run lots of workshops, the sort of practical activities or discussion groups and... with business teams or with more science-based teams. I mean, my colleague Helen Story, you may have heard of, she mm-hmm. has done a huge amount of work with scientists and chemists and asking awkward questions that need answers.
Of course.
And what if? It's the what-if question.
It's the research mindset for start, course. And kind of linking this and based on this line of thought, there's always probably, and I would like to have your opinion, how is difficult or is it difficult to make the others understand the benefits of this transdisciplinary or cross-disciplinary approach? And looking for in a more business understanding, how do you measure the results to present to others the impact of this, the positive impact of this approach and practice?
Well, measuring is difficult, of course, but something such as the educational course that I mentioned, the online course, that's easily measured by the number of people signing up to it and the spread that has, which is a very positive thing. I mean, in terms of research and in academia, we're measured for our outputs and for our impact, but the impact could be several years later.
Exactly.
And obviously impact means some sort of change, whether it's a change in curriculum or adopting of practices, but within the industry one can measure or one can observe changes in the way things are done or the types of communication. It's not easy to measure scientifically, but qualitatively I think those measures could become clear. We have a lot of people who do things through a sort of artistic communication, so exhibitions, curating exhibitions, making films, just trying to raise awareness and also stimulate action.
Of course.
It isn't easy to directly measure in a very scientific way or in terms of numerical data, but I think there are ways of showing or demonstrating change over a period of time. It's not going to be instant necessarily.
And I almost can guess that you probably would present creatively new indicators to measure new ways
Absolutely.
Of... Because we are trying to
Absolutely.
Find out different
yeah.
values
yeah.
also.
It is about different values. It's
exactly.
about also not just economic value.
Exactly.
It is about social value. It is about cultural value as well. So we add in, you know, as well as sort of people, planet, profit or place, we add in cultural value. I mentioned the Better Lives Initiative, which is across London College of Fashion. And one of the things that is done there is we're taking skills into, for instance, a women's prison in the East End of London, where there are projects, social projects running, where those inmates are either relearning or learning sewing skills within a prison context, where there is a workshop within the prison, which means that there's training and purpose and benefit that has some sort of... It's also about regenerating manufacturing within the East End of London, which is a traditional manufacturing area for fashion and tailoring. And, you know, there's that you can measure the impact of, positive impact of that sort of project very well.
And I would say, once again, a new business model.
Yes, yes.
Looking for...
Definitely.
Trying to find
and that's
support economic...
Both the Fire Up project and the Fashion Fostering Sustainable Practices project that we're just running are definitely about harnessing and really examining and looking at new business models. Because one thing is absolutely for sure, it can't just be business as usual, as has been.
Yes.
And I think one of the biggest events that really... It's been over 15 years or more been building up within the industry, this awareness and then need for action within the fashion industry as a whole. But one of the key wake-up calls was the Rana Plaza disaster in 2013, which stimulated a really great global campaign called the Fashion Revolution,
yes.
Which really has been fantastic. This is somebody who had a small fashion business, co-founded by two people who run fashion businesses, and just have really engaged with enough's enough, something's got to be done, and have created the most fantastic global campaign.
An impact.
Public,
sure.
And there's impact
exactly.
there. Public-facing campaign.
Exactly. What kind of competence should the students enrolled in the future fashion design courses have in order to be able to incorporate the newest technology in their designs?
Well, they have to be open and not really just... I think they have to... be research-minded, be, you know, which is open-minded and experimental, and be prepared to have dialogue around and try and really look, take a sort of big overview and not just be in a sort of personal quest. I think the quest for the sort of star designer is fine, but it isn't the only, you know, it's actually a bigger issue now. So I think, first of all, awareness raising has to be done within the education, fashion education. But I think that technology can be a way, definitely, to dematerialise,
mm-hmm.
to provide experiences, that are fashion experiences but don't necessarily require the same level of physical consumption. So I think we're still in the digital Middle Ages, so I think it's all possible. There's all sorts of things possible. And, of course, you know, there's a lot of discussion about robotics and AI and so on. Actually, I don't think anybody quite knows where that's going to end up. But I do think, I still feel that fashion is one of the last craft-based industries, and I do think it's still about materiality. Mm-hmm. It's still about things which we wear on our bodies and can feel and touch. And I think that's hopefully not going to completely go away, even if we have electronics. I mean, I'm going to talk about some sort of electronic wearable fashion. I mean, it's not just about because we can do it. It's not about technology push. Mm-hmm. It's more about what can technology do for us to enhance what we do, and not just because we can. And also, the waste, not just creating new waste streams. So the design function for electronics within clothing or any other type of textile has to be with a view to end of life and disposal. So everybody has to think much more holistically, is what I would advise students. They really do have to think about not just what it looks like, not just what materials they're using, but also what is its end of life and how could it be recirculated? How can these materials be maintained within circulation, as in the buzzword, the circular economy?
Perfect. This is exactly what I think as a sustainable thinking. Mm. Yes. I would also like to know who else is pioneering the change in fashion and design? You have...
Well, I'm going to mention a few, you know, a few pioneers, really. But in terms of technology, we have a company called Cute Circuit, who are two individuals. One is a fashion designer, one was an interaction designer. They met while studying. And they have done some very interesting work. A lot of it is for the entertainment industry now, but they also are doing work which is to help... people's lives, really. So they have something, they were the first pioneers of something called the hug shirt, which is about transmitting emotion to a loved one remotely. There's a lot of that sort of thing going on. And then, I mean, there are quite a lot of examples. I mentioned the fashion revolution, and, you know, I think that the people behind that have been extraordinarily successful in their communication. So Ursula de Castro, and name is gone, sorry.
Don't worry. I would say that reinforcing probably emotions and human interactions.
It's the human side is so important. We cannot... That's,
I completely agree.
We're never going to stop being humans, I don't think.
I hope so.
Some of us might be cyborgs, but I think, you know, we're not sure where this is going to go, but... I do think the human... there's two things to really never let go of. One is humanity and the other is nature and the natural world.
Yes.
And this is the only planet we've got. And we're already using up the resources at 3 or 4 times the rate that it's really at all sustainable. And planetary boundaries are being crossed, you know, water, resources, land. You know, it's a very... It's not a happy story if you start... maintaining that, so we have to have radical systemic change, but we also in education we have that responsibility to educate. It probably is the next generation that will be, we're the last people that generations that can actually do something about this.
Yes, of course. So it's, I would say, also true for designers and all the stakeholders that we we work with.
Yeah.
To end, I would ask a more practical but always important question. So, considering that you are designing and researching in a very innovative area with probably a lot of things to prove in a still consumerism society, how do you manage to get funding for your research?
Well, I'm lucky to have funding. I have to apply for funding from either the Arts and Humanities Research, the UK Research Councils. I've had funding. We have In the centre, we've got collaborations. I mentioned Kering. We had a five-year collaboration with Kering Group, which is very innovative. And so sometimes it's industry sponsorship, and sometimes it's research council funding. But there hasn't been that much in fashion. I mentioned, I think, a project called Designing for the 21st Century. I had a fashion project within that. And people thought, called Interrogating Fashion. New paradigms for fashion design in the 21st century. People laughed at me, but then they thought, actually, later on, we need interrogating photography, interrogating graphic design, interrogating everything. You know, it's a question of starting somewhere.
Yes, and be pioneering and believing that we could make a difference.
Trying to make it, and
take risks, probably, also.
A few.
So thank you so much for accepting this challenge. We hope to see you soon to have further joint reflections. And once again, thank you so much for doing this podcast to IAD and Universidad Europea.
If you like what you heard today, please subscribe to our podcast on the main platform. For more information about the Unrelease podcast, go to unrelease.unitcom-yad.pt. There you can find all the episodes and more information about our guests. Unrelease podcast is the result of the work of the students of Design Cultures and Practices course from the PhD in Design program of IAD Universidad Europea. It's produced and edited by Unitcom.